Hello, people. Hey, I want to say thank you for being here tonight. I know it's a Saturday. I know some of you have a lot of stuff going on Saturdays. You're juggling a lot, and you've made this commitment to be here at church, and I just want to say I appreciate that. Some of you didn't have anything going on, so this was it. So this was your best option, and you're here. Well, I'm glad you're here, too. Thank you for joining us here tonight. As Paul said, my name's Ben. I'm going to show you a picture of my family just so you get a little more context as to who we are. So I have two daughters. Older one is Lila, that's Esme, and then my wife, and then I'm the guy, the tall guy, that's me. If you know, you haven't paid attention to like pop culture references since like the 70s, or you only listen to talk radio, or you only listen to Conway Twitty, then you may not completely understand the reference here. It's a reference to an early 90s rap song. So that's Ice Ice Baby. That was our baby announcement. That's how we announced we're pregnant. So thank you. I don't know if you're clapping that we're pregnant or you're clapping at how good our announcement was that we're pregnant, but I'll take it either way. So for some of you who are confused, like when you saw that, was that mean like Ice Ice Skater? Is like my wife an ice skater? No, that's Ice Ice Baby. It was a rap song. Anyway, so we're having another kid. All that to say, our third is due, as Paul said, at Thanksgiving. So, you know, I'm going to have three girls and a wife, and people, you know, say to me, you know, how are you going to deal with all that drama, you know, and clothes everywhere, and people just being needy, and I was like, that sounds like me, you know? Ain't nobody more high, needy, and dramatic than me, so I can get right there in the mix with them, totally comfortable. I have a mom, three older sisters, a wife, and I'm about to have three daughters, so I don't really know how to be around dudes, you know? So that's my life. So speaking of pop culture references that you may or may not get, okay, I'm just going to make one more and then I'll leave you alone at that. A couple of years ago, my wife and I were sitting on the couch. We were both doing some work. I was doing work. She might have been like online shopping or something, but we were sitting there on our laptops. Our kids were asleep and she was listening to this song and she listened to it a couple of times and I'm over here working kind of like getting focused, my kids are asleep, so I'm not really paying attention, but you know, it's like I can kind of hear this song playing over and over in my mind, and so finally I stepped over and I was like, Holly, well, what are you listening to? And she was like, check out this music video. So she showed me a music video, and I don't know if there's ever been a song where the first couple of times you heard it, and then they played it so much that after a while, like, you really just, it made you violently angry, you know? It's kind of like All I Want for Christmas is You at Christmas time with Mariah. You hear it, and you're like, oh, it's Christmas time. Then after a while, you're like, I'm going to kill that song, you know? So that's how I feel about the song Happy, you know? It's like they play it, and then they play it again, and our kids want to listen to it. I'm like, I'm not happy anymore, okay? So they played this song. This is the first time I heard it. They played it over and over again, but I'm going to put just a little sample of the lyrics up there. Again, if you don't know it, don't sweat it. But the lyrics said this, because I'm all about that bass, about that bass, no trouble. Some of you are like, I have no clue what you're talking about. Well, that's how I felt the first time I heard this song, and I thought this was a song about a lady talking about her musical preference. I like songs that are a little more bass heavy, not so much songs that are, you know, treble-ish, treble-matic, I don't know how you call that. But I watched the music video, and quickly I realized when she was talking about bass, she was talking about body. You know, it's like bass, you know, it was like, In the South, somebody with more bass, we call them healthy, okay? That's a healthy person. So she's talking about bass is somebody with a little skin on their bones, and somebody, you know, treble was somebody with not enough skin on their bones. Well, one of the things that I've learned to do, and this may be a terrible habit, but because I work primarily with teenagers, and I work with teenagers for the most part in church settings. I do some in public school settings and some in, you know, in settings outside of that, but for the most part, I work with teenagers in the church setting. So I hear about and I'm aware of, you know, what teenage culture can really be like, and people will pass on messages and they'll tell me what's happening. But sometimes you just really have to know just how, you know, crazy teenagers are. And I assume on this text thread, this comment thread that I'm reading, that most of these people are teenagers, because one of the things I've learned to do to find out what teenagers really think about some things are to read YouTube comments. And I realize that that's probably a bad habit to get into, but then all of a sudden people are saying what they really feel. Because teenagers in particular will come up with ridiculous usernames it's like Fruit Loops 705, you know, and you're like, okay, you can say whatever you want if your YouTube name is Fruit Loops. Like, you don't have to put a picture of yourself. You don't have to say your first name and last name. You can just say whatever you want. So I'm reading through pages of YouTube comments on this music video. And at first, I'm so naive, I thought people were going to be like, yeah, you know, I got my bass from my mama, you know, or like, I've been at the gym trying to put a little bass on myself and it's not working. But no, all of a sudden we're getting into, man, this is sexism, it's racism, it's body issues. This is people talking about people from different, you know, socioeconomic backgrounds. And it was just nasty. It was just nasty how cruel people were. And again, I understand that they had the, you know, the ability to like come up with a different username so you didn't have to look anybody in the eye. It wasn't even like you had to text somebody. You can just put out there whatever you want to put out there. But it didn't take me long to draw this conclusion, and I'll talk about how it's impacted me since then, which is simply this statement right here. You can put it up on the screen, which is this: it's easy to treat people like they don't matter. It's easy. I have to drink a lot of water because when I get nervous, my throat gets dry. And when I speak, I get nervous, okay? I started doing this in 1998, and people are like, you still get nervous? And I'm like, yes. They give you a microphone and put a bunch of people in a room. That should make you nervous, okay? So it is easy to treat people like they don't matter. I tell teenagers, I say, you know what? This is going to be one of the most natural things that you do, is treat people like they don't matter. You don't have to get coaching on that. Your dad doesn't have to, you know, go outside and teach you how to do that. You don't have to read and study up. Like, how do I treat people like they don't matter? This is going to be so natural for you to do. And for us adults, it's really, really easy for us to treat people like they don't matter. And so in that moment, you know, my natural tendency is to look at all these people who are treating people like they don't matter and treat these people like they don't matter. But I made a decision in that moment that I wanted to be aware of something, which was this: how often in my life do I consciously or unconsciously make this decision? You can put it up here on the screen. I make this decision, you can go to the next slide, that me is greater than you. You know, how often do I decide that I'm better than you because of anything, because of looks, beliefs, where we come from, what we stand for, behavior, family? How often do we make this decision? You know, I think about a couple months ago, we were redoing the floors downstairs in our house, and the flooring guy's a nice guy. I know him, and we had an issue with a leak. It messed up some of the flooring, and the leak, you know, we traced it back to something that he had done, taken in and out of the house. And so we're having this discussion about having some parts of our floor redone based on something that happened. Now, you know, he's telling me that that's not what happened. It's basically an argument over whether or not he's going to take care of this, okay? This is the kind of thing that happens. And he's stating his side, I'm stating my side, and we're both kind of trying to figure out how this floor is going to be repaired and how it's going to be paid for, who's going to cover it, is it our responsibility? And we walked away, and I'm like, okay, a disagreement over floors being redone. Surely this happens all the time. But I thought, you know what? What was interesting when I think back to this interaction that we had, he didn't act like he was better than me, even though he disagreed with my point. But I was like, you know what? I think my attitude and the way I carried myself towards him in this conversation really betrayed that I think I'm better than this guy. I tried to pay attention today, going to the Atlanta airport, where you can make a lot of me is greater than you decisions about people. And then sitting on the airplane next to a guy who was talking the ear off of a girl who was sitting on the other side of him, and I, you know, kind of got the feeling she didn't want him to talk her ear off and ask her a million questions, and, you know, telling my wife about it later and making a comment about this guy like I was better than him because he was talking a lot to this girl on our airplane. I could go on and on just talking about me. And I've been trying ever since this random music video that I watched with these reading these comments to just pay attention in my life to times that I make a decision about somebody based on something they do, say, think, believe, whatever, when I make a decision that I'm better than them. Now, here's what's true for most of us in the room. You can put this up on the screen. Here's what's true for us, that we don't like it when people talk about us behind our back, unless they're saying awesome compliments, okay? Unless they're talking about how good we look or how talented we are, okay? We don't like it when people label us. And again, unless that label comes with something that's really awesome, you know, and we're associated with people we love being labeled with. Next, we don't like it when people generalize us. I don't love it when people say all Christians are ignorant, okay? I don't like that label because I don't think it's true. So I don't like it when people just label us or generalize us. And finally, we don't like it when people judge us. We don't like it when people make a decision about us, and especially when they put themselves in the position of the superior one, okay? We don't like that. We don't like it when people do that. You can go to the next slide. Here's what's true is that most of us talk about people behind their back. Next slide, most of us label people. Next slide, most of us generalize people. And finally, yes, most of us judge people. Now, there are situations when it comes to close relationships, your family. You have to make a judgment. You have to make a decision about your kids. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about a close friend that you have to have a conversation with and say, out of humility, listen, I see the way in a direction where your life is going, and I don't do that out of judgment, but I have judged and perceived a direction your life is going. We need to have a conversation about that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people just in and around us, in and around our community, people we see in places, or people, you know, we see online, where we just make decisions about them. We label them, generalize them. Oh, everybody in that category is blank. Oh, all blank people are blank. You know, we just make these decisions and we blanket people with statements like that, even though we don't like it when people do that about us. In fact, one step further. One of the things, if we're not careful, and in my experience being at this church a couple times, this does not seem like a church that really fosters this kind of attitude whatsoever, but as people who follow Jesus, and I recognize not all of you in here would claim to be Jesus followers. In fact, this may be the reason why you would say, I don't do the whole God, church, Jesus thing because of this. It's dangerous sometimes in the church world where we can say this when it comes to judgment, that we can make a decision about people that my sin is less than your sin. That in fact, we can make a decision that somebody just may not matter as much as us, and we can make that decision in the name of Jesus. We can hold up a Bible and all of a sudden take value away from somebody in the name of faith. You don't want to do that. We don't want to be people who do that. And if you've been burnt or hurt by the church, or you've just been around Christians and you're like, you know, I've had about enough of this. I'm going to distance myself from that a little bit. And somehow through, you know, circumstances, you find yourself back in a church and you're like, I promise never to be in one of these again. I just want to say, number one, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for times that people have made a decision that you're less than because of what you do, because of your sin. And I also want to let you know from a reassuring standpoint that that's not what Jesus taught. And so hopefully what we talk about today for the next few minutes is going to be helpful because, you know, often people just make the mistake of associating Christians with Jesus, and that's not always the case, okay? Now, you've been talking this year, the theme for this year is, what does love require of me? So, hold that thought. When we find ourselves in situations, and particularly in relationships with people who are close to us or people on the peripheral or in and around our lives, we find ourselves having to assess a situation and ask ourselves, hey, what would I do if I were looking at this through the filter of what's best for them? If I were to approach this situation with a what's best for them filter, what would I do? Sometimes that involves tough conversations. Sometimes that involves difficult decisions. It's not all puppies and rainbows, but that's what we're talking about this year, is what does love require of me in this situation? So that's what we're going to talk about today as we look at the Sermon on the Mount. Sermon on the Mount is short for Sermon on the Mountain, okay? If you're always wondering what that was short for, Sermon on the Mount. And it's a very famous sermon, probably Jesus' most famous sermon. Matthew records it, 137 verses, so it's pretty long. And we're going to look at Luke. Luke recorded it in 30 verses. So he was like, get to the point, Jesus, you know? So he kind of did some editing on that. And we're going to look at a little section out of Luke, very intelligent guy who walked with Jesus, his recording of the Sermon on the Mount. And so we'll look at it right here. It's in Luke chapter 6. We're going to start in verse 31. Now, you probably know this verse or some version of this verse, even if you don't really do the church thing, because we call it the golden rule. Do to others as you would like them to do to you. So this traces back to Jesus. Some scholars believe that this was Jesus quoting other scholars who had come up with this before him. I don't know. I'm just saying Jesus said it, so I'm talking about it. Most of us are aware of it. Even if you don't do church, everybody would agree this is a good idea. Do to others as you would have them do to you. Or I paraphrase it this way. You can go to the next slide. Is talk about people on Facebook as you would like them to talk about you. Or talk to your kid's coach the way you would want players' parents to talk about you if you were the coach. Or talk about other moms the way you wish other moms would talk about you. There's all kinds of situations where we could just contextualize this and say, I could say to teenagers, you know what, teenagers, talk to your parents the way you wish your parents and step-parents would talk to you. I could go on, but I won't. I will go on, however, with the verse. So he starts with the golden rule, okay? Then he's like, all right, we're going to talk about this in a little more detail. If you love only those who love you, why should you get credit for that? Even sinners love those who love them. Now, again, in this culture, it was like right side of the room, left side of the room. We got the good people, and then we have the sinners over here. And it was a very clear line. They had very clear standards of, like, you know, keeping up with moral ethics and who fit in and who didn't in this culture. So, you know, when Jesus says sinners, everybody on this side of the room is looking over there like, oh, yeah, those guys, even they can do that, okay? So even sinners do this. Again, I paraphrase this part of the verse, and then I'll stop paraphrasing these verses. If you're only nice to in-laws who are nice to you, why should you get a trophy for that? Anybody can do that. Oh, man, you got a cool brother-in-law, and you're nice to him? Great job. Seriously, but anybody can do that. Your mother-in-law is awesome, and so you and her get along well. Man, that is great. But you don't get a trophy for that. Because anybody whose mother-in-law is awesome and you get along with her great, that's easy to be nice to her. It's everybody else. Some of you are like, in-laws, you're talking about my adult sister, okay? Like, I can't, it's just trouble. But Jesus is like, okay, look, if you're just nice to people who are nice to you and you love people who love you, like, anybody can do that. Like, you don't get special, like, Jesus credit for that. You know, Jesus is like, good job, but, you know, that was actually pretty easy. What does love require of me? Love probably is going to require a little more than just being nice to people who are already nice to you and loving people who already love you. Like, we all get that. So Jesus continues, and he explains it in a little more detail. And if you do good only to those who do good to you, why should you get credit? Even sinners do that much, and they're like, okay, we got it, all right? We're not getting credit. And if you lend money only to those who can repay you, why should you get credit? Even sinners will lend to other sinners for a full return. You're going to lend money to someone, and they're going to pay you back in full? Like, that's a nice gesture. They were in a situation, they needed it, you gave it to them, they paid you back. Again, a lot of people can do this. Sometimes love requires more of me, so Jesus explains. Love your enemies. And they're like, all right, heard you talk about this before. We get it. Like, this is, now you're starting to get, you know, special Jesus credit for this. We got that. Do good to them. Okay. All right, now you're pushing your luck a little bit. Like, love them. That's great. We can love them from a distance, pray for them, be nice to them. Do good to them. Like, now you're getting me uncomfortable. Now this is the part when Jesus is preaching where I want to walk away because I got the good stuff that makes me feel good, and then you start saying stuff like this. And then he says, lend to them without expecting to be repaid. We cannot imagine in this culture how crazy of a concept this is. Not just from a standpoint of they hadn't really thought of it or heard of it before, but in this standpoint, like, you know, all this idea of where you stand and doing good and who repays what, this was part of kind of what set up the government structure. This is kind of what kept their little, you know, society organized. So people are like, whoa, 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 this is way out there. He says, then your reward from heaven will be great. He's like, they don't even pay you back. He said, don't worry about that. I got you. Okay, I'll take care of that. You do good to them, love them, you lend to them, don't worry about that. I'll take care of making sure that you're rewarded for that. Well, how are you going to make sure? Don't you worry about that. You're not God, I'm God. I'll take care of that. I'll make sure that your reward from heaven will be great and you will truly be acting as children of the Most High. He's like, okay, now you're going to get some credit. Okay, now I'm going to recognize that you're taking some steps as to what love requires of you. For he is kind to those who are unthankful and wicked. So if we want to find out, how do we act as children of the Most High? Well, you go back. You love your enemies? You can go back one slide. I'm sorry. I was going backwards, not forwards. Do you love your enemies? Do good to them and lend to them without expecting to be repaid. And whatever that context looks like for you right now, where you are with people around you. He's like, yeah, then you're going to be children of the Most High. Why? Because here's what he does. He's kind to those who are unthankful, and he's kind to those who are wicked. He doesn't act like me, greater than you, even though he could say that to anybody, but even with people who are ungrateful and who are wicked. He doesn't even take that approach with them. What approach does he take with them? He takes an approach of compassion and humility, which leads us to this next, the next verse where it kind of wraps up. You must be compassionate just as your Father is compassionate. Well, how are you compassionate? You love your enemies, you do good, and you lend to them without expecting anything in return. What does that mean? It means you treat them well. You treat them well. You don't act like you're better than them or that your sin is less than their sin, even if they act like they're better than you. Even if they act like, you know, sin doesn't matter. Even if they act like their sin is less than your sin. Even if they act like, you know, they disagree with the decisions you make and they don't like the way you live your life. They look, think, act, believe differently than you. Be compassionate as the Father is compassionate to them, which is to love them and to do good to them. See, for those of you who are parents or can remember being parents of young kids or who will be in the future, I kind of want to put it to you this way, which is you like it when people treat your kids well, even when they're bad. Or you remember being bad, you know, when your kids were young and you're like, for the most part, I can contain them when I'm in a store, and then you had those situations where you couldn't. And it was like, man, our kids were just bad. Our kids were just really, really bad in that store. But you know what? The lady working the checkout counter, she still treated them well, even though they were acting terribly. Like, yeah, I like that lady. Church, oh my goodness, yes. This is when I'm like, my kids are like running around and like, you know, almost tripping people. And I'm like, you're dangerous. You're dangerous to this church. And I'm like, you don't realize how many people you almost just injured. And people are still smiling and being sweet to my kids. I'm like, man, you're awesome. Because I'm not going to be that nice to your kids if they almost hurt me, you know? Like, it's going to be a different conversation. But you appreciate that. When your kids are acting bad and people still treat them well, you're like, yeah, that's cool. Next part. God likes it when people treat his kids well. Even when they're acting bad. And this is not permit everything. This is not, you know, allow anybody to do anything. In the closest parts of your inner circle, your closest relationships, there is room for judgment, and love requires you sometimes to have difficult conversations and to make difficult choices. I'm talking about everywhere else outside of that. When you look at people and you make decisions about them based on all the things that we've talked about, you see people and what they do and what they don't do, and you still treat them well, I think God says, I appreciate that. Because I recognize they don't look, think, talk, behave, believe like you do, but they still matter to me. And I sent my son, Jesus, to die for them. And so I appreciate that you still treat them well. I'm going to give a little bit of context here. I made an observation, and I'm not, you know, I love the Bible, studying the Bible. I don't consider myself a scholar by any means, so I don't want to state this as like scholarly truth. But you follow the life of Jesus, and in his culture, he really revolutionized the treatment of four different groups of people. And the first group of people was women. In that society, women, you know, for the most part, did not come outside. If they did, they would cover them their faces and their heads, and they didn't speak to men, and Jesus would talk to them. The first person Jesus announced that he was the Messiah to was a woman. And Jesus assigned them great value, gave them positions of leadership. Jesus flipped culture upside down in the way that he treated women. And, you know, it brings us to a question for those of you in this room is, you know, how do you treat the women around you? How do you talk about the women around you? And, you know, having daughters, again, sisters, you know, I kind of tune in to this a lot. And I was talking one day to my wife, and there was some situation, I cannot even remember the context of it. And I was referring to, you know, a guy, and we work with these college age students or students that were in, you know, my former student ministries that are now college age or, you know, early 20s. And I was talking about the way he was treating her, and I don't remember exactly, but I told my wife, I was like, man, girls have it tough. And she knew I was referring to the way guys treat them. And she said, yeah, and you know who makes it worst of all for women? Women. I was like, man, y'all don't get breaks from anybody. And Jesus revolutionized the way people looked at, talked to, and talked about women. Just something for you to think about. Next category was children. Children were overlooked, ignored, and definitely a different culture than we live in today, but kind of, you know, waiting until you're old enough, you know, to contribute in some way, shape, or form to what's happening in our family or in our village. And Jesus was like, come on, sit on my lap, let's talk. I want to hear what you have to say. You know what? All of you, you should follow their lead. They talk to me and just trust me, and they talk no stream of consciousness. They don't feel all aware of themselves and other people. They just show up and tell me what's going on in their lives and just trust me with whatever it is, and you ought to follow their lead. These are some important leaders. And, you know, we live in a day and age that's way tougher for kids to grow up in than it ever has been. And so whether you have kids or you haven't had kids or you haven't had kids in a long time, for us to have a heart for the next generation, the future leaders of the church, future husbands and wives, I think as a church, not just looking at yourselves or even if you're retired, not just looking at your own grandkids, but looking at a church saying, you know what, how can we make a difference? How can we make a difference in the lives of kids in this church, in this community? How can we assign great value to them? Next category was the elderly. Again, same thing, often ignored, overlooked. Jesus not only, you know, showed immense value to the elderly, but, you know, encouraged people to do the same. The disciples, when they started the early church, a big part of what they did was taking care of elderly and the widows. It's a big deal. That's a responsibility that I believe we all have. And then finally, outcasts. Outcasts in this culture, either because of their sin, because of some sort of physical ailment, or because of the tribe or people group that they came from. And what's interesting to me is that for those of you who have gone on or supported a mission trip, you know, mission trip, you go to other places and cultures where people are making, they look different than you, and they have different, you know, cultures and customs than you, and they may be making decisions you completely disagree with, and you go in and you love them and you embrace them with the goal of building a relationship that eventually may lead to an opportunity to talk with them about Jesus or open the dialogue about Jesus. And, you know, we don't do that here. Often we come back here and it's like, oh, can you believe? And she said, and oh, and, you know, the right wing, left wing, and, you know, moms who, you know, vaccinate their kids and moms who don't and this and that, you know, public school, private school, you know, all of this stuff. All of a sudden we're so factioned when we go on mission trips and we're just loving to people who believe differently than us. It's just something to think about. My oldest daughter, Lila, I've been taking her to school. She's in third grade since she was in kindergarten. And she's different from my other daughter. I don't know, for those of you who have kids or maybe they're older now, but you remember when they were young, you have some who just wake up and they're already talking, like in the morning. Like they're just morning people. Just wake up and talk. My other daughter, she wakes up and we call her Grumpy Kitty because she wakes up and is just in a foul mood. So that's kind of how I am. So I can relate with her. My wife wakes up just ready to chit-chat, okay? So I drive Lila to school and she's just talking. I can't even form sentences in the morning. My wife's like, hey, did you sign that, you know, parent release form? And I'm like, ugh, you know? So I'm grunting. That's the best I can do. So she just talks. And so we'll be in the car on the way, and she's like, hey, Daddy, what do you think it would be like if a kitty cat came to my class? I'm like, do you think there'd be like, you'd have a backpack? But a backpack would probably be too heavy for a kitty cat, and I don't know, you know, what my teacher would have the kitty cat do, and would we just like put it in a cage, but we wouldn't want it to be in a cage, we maybe want it to have its own desk, and what would a kitty cat desk look like, and what are some of the things you would want to teach kitty cat, what we do at recess? And I'm like, stop talking, you know? And so finally I've learned, like, sometimes I can just throw a question at her to kind of like get her off kilter for a second, because she's like, you know, and what is a kitty cat going to eat for lunch? Going to bring its own lunch? And sometimes I'll be like, hey, you ever thought about what if your class was taught by a kitty cat? And she's like, oh, I've never thought about that. And I'm like, whatever it takes for you just to stop talking. Like, I want the kitty cat to do that, you know? But I get ready to drop her off. And not every day, but almost every day, I'll have this thing that I say to her, a question that I ask her that she answers, and I'll put it up here on the screen for you, and I'll say, Lila, why do people matter? And she'll say, because they're people. We have this secondary kind of phrase that we've developed since where I'll then say, what's the best way to show people they matter? And she'll say, by being kind and loving. But for a couple years, this was all we said. Hey, why do people matter? Because they're people, you know? I'm like, well, you are all excited about a kitty cat coming to your class. You can give me a little enthusiasm on this answer, you know? But here's why I have her repeat this. Is because I don't want her to grow up in a culture where it's the most natural thing you can do is decide that people don't matter, number one. But I don't want her growing up thinking that people have to contribute something to her life in order for her to assign value to them. I don't want her to grow up thinking it's okay to create categories of people who matter and people who don't matter. And then all of a sudden, through her filter or some of her friend's filter or a friend's parent's filter, that she decides who gets to fit in this category and who doesn't. And I don't want her to go to school and think, you know what, the people who, you know, I most get along with, who most agree with me and, you know, I have the most fun with, those are the people who matter, these people don't. I don't want her to feel like she has the power or the right to take value away from somebody for any reason. But particularly, I want her to know that people matter because people were created by God. And sure, there are people, the image of God based on the fall and based on sin has become fractured, very fractured. We see the effects of sin as it has trickled throughout generations of humanity. However, people matter because they are people. And I don't want to put myself and I don't want to put her and think she has the ability to get on the judgment seat of humanity and decide who doesn't. And that's probably a little too big of an explanation for her right now. So I just want her to say, because they're people. That's why they matter. I wrote down a list of maybe not the 10, but 10, the first 10 people I could think of that since, you know, early teenage years have had the most impact and influence on my life for the good. I've had some people that have had some influence on my life for the bad. That's another talk for another time, okay? But the people who have most impacted my life for the good, that I look back and say, okay, the good decisions in life that I've made, grace of God, but I also got, you know, the influence of people in my life. And so I'm looking at this list, and they weren't all my age, but some of them were. Some of them were peers. Some of them were leaders. Some of them were just people in and around my life that were older than me. They weren't all believers. Most of them were. I grew up as a preacher's kid in the church, but not all of them were. Not all of them were men. There are some women on this list. Some of them are cool people. Some of them are not cool people. And some of them are people that are just have natural, eloquent leadership. And some of them are people that are very shy and introverted and, you know, don't love the being out in public around a bunch of people kind of thing. And then the personalities range wide, far to left, from intensity to, you know, laid back, sense of humor, styles, all of that. So I'm like, okay, what is the common thread with all the people on this list? And the common thread on this list was simply this, and this is what I'll leave you with tonight. They were all people who didn't think they were better than me. That all of these people were people who didn't think, or at least they didn't act like it. They didn't think they were better than me. But when I track back to the times when these people had the most influence on me, they were better than me. And I don't mean like as people, they had more value than me. I'm saying they were making better decisions. Like I look at some of these people that intersected at my life at a time where I was far away from God, making terrible decisions. And I encountered these people who didn't act like they were better than me. And what's sad for me is I can go back into my journey with God, especially in the first couple years when God was turning my life around, and I, in the name of Jesus, acted like I was better than some people. They don't have the opportunity to put me on this list years later if God gets a hold of their life, because I did act like I was better than them. But I think back to people, and you know, we don't have time to talk about all the different ways and the things they taught me and why I feel like they influenced me. But at times in my life where they had their lives together more than I did, they were making better decisions than I did, or they were just further along in their wisdom and understanding of things, and they just had more influence. Their life intersected with mine in some way, shape, or form. Either I was related to them, or they were a coach, or they were a friend, or we were in college at the same time, or went to the same church, or we're just friends randomly. My life intersected with theirs. They influenced me, some of which I'm talking about, you know, 20, 25 years later, because they didn't think or act like they were better than me. And so this is not just about us going out and saying, you know what, yeah, let's show more grace. Let's be more tolerant. Let's show more patience with people. No, this is compassion. This is to take an approach of humility with people to say, you know what does love require of me? To show compassion and humility towards someone, because that may be the thing that God uses to turn a light on in their lives. And that may be a thing that God uses to make a church attractive to them. And that may be the thing that God uses to change the view that they've had of Christians, because they've encountered Christians who did. And now they're encountering one who's compassionate and who's humble. And all of a sudden, they're like, man, there's something in that. There's something that I want. And that's how Jesus spread his name early on to people, is a bunch of people who went out there and showed compassion and humility to people, loved them, and thus the way was formed, which eventually became the church. Let's pray together. God, I know that this is so difficult in some situations. Overall, I think, God, a lot of us agree, and maybe it was a good wake-up call, but I know that for most of us, there are specific situations or people or groups of people that it just is so difficult. And God, I pray that you will stretch our ability to love, that when it comes to what love requires of us, that we will be willing to allow you to lead us out into one step further than we thought we were capable of going. And God, I pray for wisdom for situations in families where it's close and people are in close relationships and love is going to require something difficult. It's going to require some judgment and a judgment call and some tough conversations. But when it comes to the way we approach people who we would consider enemies, or just maybe not call them enemies, but by the way that we think about them and approach them, consider them to be enemies, or just think of ourselves as better than them, God, help us to take another step towards what love requires of us, and ultimately help us to reflect you to this world, to reflect Jesus to people by the way that we treat them. God, please help us to do that. We need a lot of your help to do this, even to take one step. So God, please help us, and help us to show that same love to the people inside of this room. In Jesus' name I pray, amen.